Well, hello and welcome to Talk About Jazz with Doug Hall. I'm your host, Doug Hall. And today's musical guest is Pavla Zvejkic. And he is a Berklee College of Music student and current graduate of the Berklee Global Jazz Institute in Boston, Massachusetts. There is also an interesting side note, and we'll be asking him some questions later. He is a managing director of the Youth Jazz Rock Festival in Serbia. So again, hello and welcome, Pavle.
And thank you.
We appreciate your time here today, and always more than interesting to have young musicians from Berklee particularly who have so much range and experience and so much to share musically. I just wanted to start with your background, and I could preface that a little bit by telling our audience that I have interviewed Danilo Perez, and he's an amazing human being. He put together and is the director of the Berklee Global Jazz Institute, a concept that he created. The idea being a bigger worldview, more inclusive of a greater variety of artists. And that is something that he has succeeded at enormously. And herein is an example. An extraordinary student and musician and jazz pianist. And the system has included so much talent and so many amazing musicians. I wonder, Pavla, if you could just talk a little bit about your journey, as you are Serbian, your journey musically and personally that brought you to Berklee.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was interested in music. I basically fell in love in music very, very, very early, like since I was 7 years old. And I kind of knew even then that that's what I want to do professionally. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I want to pursue it as an art form in any way possible. Because in my household, music was always around. Although none of my parents are musicians, I was bombarded by amazing music from a tender age. So my father in particular showed me a lot of jazz, a lot of minimalism, a lot of contemporary classical music, a lot of rock-related genres like post-punk, alternative rock, grunge, which I'm also absolutely in love with and I play to this day. So by nature, I decided to go to a music school in Serbia, where I met a lot of inspiring professors. And then I was fortunate enough to meet some alumni from Berklee College of Music that are originally from Serbia. And thanks to their help and thanks to some prior experiences with band leading and just being around a lot of great jazz musicians back home, I managed to do the audition for Berklee College of Music, ended up getting into it. Did the undergrad at Berklee, but I have met Marco Pignataro, who together with Danilo Perez runs the Berklee Global Jazz Institute. I actually met him in 2018, which is when I started flirting with this idea of attending the Berklee Global Jazz Institute master's program, which I ended up doing now. And I'm really happy that I did so, because it's really shaping me in a nice way. So much so that it gave me enough confidence to release my first solo piano album. That's kind of an inspiration of all of that music that I mentioned prior, including some of those hardcore genres that I mentioned, like punk and post-punk and stuff like that. But it's really a solo jazz piano album that's actually coming out on November 17th. I'm not sure when is this podcast going to be released, Yeah, that's a very, very brief overview of how I got to this point.
Right. Well, I'm going to ask you about the upcoming release later, so we make sure that our audience can hear the title of the album, and they can certainly find that through their own resources. Back to the Global Jazz Institute itself, Could you talk more directly about maybe its personal experience or impact on you from possibly a mentor relationships? I often find that Berklee students have a very strong mentor experience.
Yes, definitely. It's actually fascinating because as Danilo probably told you when you got an opportunity to interview him, there are visiting artists who regularly come to Berklee Global Jazz Institute. Some of them are John Patitucci, Nicholas Payton, Adam Cruz, Ben Street, some of the finest contemporary jazz musicians, basically. And the fact that I get to work with them either in small groups or one-on-one, even in certain instances, and of course with Danilo, which is obvious, it's incredibly inspiring because these people are not only like the amazing craftsmen and amazing artists and performers, but they're just as amazing as educators, and they're all very kind and supportive. That's what really struck me, because I felt, and that's something about the Berklee Global Jazz Institute that I felt from the get-go, is they care who you are beyond music. Like, yes, they care about the music, but they simply view music as a means of expressing your own message and your own personality. And that's something that Danilo really fosters. And that's incredibly inspiring. Like, they make each student feel like they have a personal relationship with each mentor. And obviously, I one of my biggest mentors from the undergrad and now at Global as well, because he also teaches master students, is László Gárdonyi from Hungary. Amazing jazz pianist, well, from the United States, because he's lived here for the past, I don't know, 40 years, but originally Hungarian, who is probably one of my greatest influences and one of my biggest, he just supports me in every way artistically, so he's really inspiring, and I could thank him for a lot of my artistic steps. So those are some of the people, some of the names that I can't help but mention when it comes to great mentors.
Yeah, well, coming around full circle, László was one of our first guests on this program. Oh. So I will send you his interview. And then I went to hear him play at the Lily Pad in Cambridge, 3 weeks ago now, 4 weeks ago?
Oh, I was there.
Yeah, I thought you might have been. Yeah, because certainly a lot of his students appeared to be there. We had a really wonderful conversation. He's intense, but yet he's very personal and obviously very passionate and dedicated. That's an interesting cycle. I find that with some of the interviews with the students that we've connected with some of the faculty. I think actually we're going to move directly into the listening portion of our interview here today. And we have two selections where we're going to listen to a segment of each. And the first one is Solitude. And Pavla, if you want to set it up at all, if you want to just sort of touch on inspiration or any sort of thoughts regarding it before we queue up just a segment of Solitude.
Absolutely. Solitude, also known as Small Hours 1, the beginning of a compilation of compositions that I've composed for the past 2 years, usually after midnight, which is why that compilation is called Small Hours. And an intro to another, to the second part of the same composition called Stoic Paranoic, that basically illustrates my vibe, or rather my atmosphere and my emotions after midnight when I'm alone with the piano. And often unpredictable things happen. I hear things that I can't hear during the day. And most of those harmonies that I explore in that intro, I think happened thanks to that phenomenon of like being really alone and turning off all of the noises from the outside world and then suddenly new possibilities come in. So that is that reflects that, and it's actually a live performance in the city hall of Subotica, Serbia, my birth city. So that is the story behind the composition.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I know the world is a noisy place and distracting, and to have creative inspiration, thoughts, or juices flowing, you need a quiet space at time. So that makes a lot of sense. Okay, well, why don't we move forward and listen to a segment of Solitude, and then you and I can comment on it afterwards.
Absolutely.
Thank you. As we fade out from listening to that segment, I'm amazed at all the intricacy, a lot of your notes as they play into chords. And I often make some notes for myself when I listen to every guest artist's piece, and I feel kind of like there's both a somber sort of contemplative feel, very emotional, deep feeling to the music, to the notes, and yet there's still a melody that moves, and I almost feel like there's still almost a little bebop thrown in there as well, with a little sort of fast-paced notation going on, and it seems to me, and I've listened to a lot of jazz, and a lot of jazz pianists are my favorite artists. Yet I don't have a schooling or a background, but Bill Evans seems to sound, so many young artists seem to be influenced by Bill Evans, and I don't know if that's the case with you at all.
Well, yes, first of all, thank you for taking notes of all of those aspects of the composition and the improvisation. I think all of that is there, including the bebop, as you mentioned, because I'm obviously influenced by the tradition of jazz and everything. Bill Evans is someone who I really, really appreciate, and obviously a pianist who I admire. But it's interesting because a lot of people have made this comment. You're not the first one, actually. A lot of people said a similar thing, yet he was never a big direct influence on me. But right. I feel like the lineage of jazz is like that. You know, there's a universal language. Yeah. And people are influenced by other people. So me being influenced by some people like Kenny Kirkland and I don't know, Kenny Barron and even a later generation of pianists that came after Bill Evans. Well, Kenny Kirkland, in fact, did come after that period. I think it's like just happens to pass on naturally. So he was never a direct inspiration, like someone who I transcribed and you know, went deep into. But I think there's also something to say about the fact that he also had a classical background. In fact, he was a classical pianist as much as he was a jazz pianist, and so do I. So do I have that background. I played classical piano since the age of 10 and until like I was 16, which is when I made the transition to jazz and other popular genres. But I think a lot of that harmony and a lot of contemporary classical harmony that inspired Bill Evans also inspired me. So I think that's where that connection comes from. And we're also, Bill Evans was obsessed with counterpoint, and so am I. And I think in that particular segment you played, there's a lot of that happening.
Right. Well, great explanation, and thank you. And for our listeners, more of an education in the background in pianists, and there is always an evolving foundation of jazz on any instrument. And the classical aspect came very clearly through to me when I heard you playing the Small Hours performance in, it appeared to be a church in your hometown in Serbia, that was on YouTube that I watched earlier yesterday.
It's actually the city hall of my town, but people often think that it's a cathedral or a church when they see the video. That is the exact performance, just in the audio format, basically. So it's the same. We just heard the recording of that particular performance. But if your viewers are interested in seeing the video, it's on my YouTube. It's my first and last name. But thank you for noticing that. And I love that particular piano. Is one of my all-time favorite pianos that I ever played on. And it's interesting because it's located in a Serbian city with 100,000 people. And I've tried some pianos like in London. I've tried all of the pianos at Berkeley, basically. I played some amazing pianos in my life. Yet this piano in a small city in the north of Serbia is still like one of the best I ever played. So it really inspires me, and I play differently in it. So thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll have you maybe set up the next composition of yours. Again, the title is in Serbian, so I'll let you pronounce it and then give us just a little bit of an introduction, which again is also performed live at the same city hall that you just spoke of.
Yes, the composition you are referring to is called Sojka Ptica. And it is actually a traditional folkloric melody from the Balkans. I believe it originated from Bosnia, which is one of the neighboring countries of Serbia. Mm-hmm. And it speaks of a bird and of a bird song. So that's where the melody comes from. And I arranged it in my own way and kind of made a true composed version of it. Tried to add all of my classical influences, all of my jazz influences into that folkloric tradition to the best of my abilities and while trying to remain honest. That's the story behind it.
Okay, wonderful. Well, let's give it a listen and we and I can both chat about it afterwards. Thank you. Well, okay, that's an amazing variety in musicianship. The pace of that is seems to be extremely fast, and I'm wondering. My notes tell me it's very dense and commanding, with punctuating chords, as well as a lot of individual note runs. And I'm wondering, how is it that, you know, as you compose, how is it that you decide where you're going to change kind of the composition, moving from something more dense to light?
That is a great question, and I think interestingly enough, both of the examples that you played, and this is great that you played those particular segments of the compositions. Both of them were kind of somewhat in the climax, in terms of, both in terms of dynamics and technical facility and even tempo. But what I find interesting about both musical examples that you played is actually they start off rather peacefully and with a much slower pace. And that, I think, that speaks to my tendency, which, again, I can't help but keep going back to that, because it is a very strong part of my background. Genres like alternative rock and post-rock and all that stuff. I think it's really deep within me. To when I go for solo development and motivic development in my soloing, I somehow can't contain myself, but I can't help but go a bit extra. Like, I have to, like, give my full body and my full emotion at that moment. And I think that often results in sounding very exciting. Not exciting, but sounding very excited. Like, sounding [S2] Sure. [S1] Like I really want to get out everything out of me, but it usually comes from a very, very slow and peaceful development. And I can't help but usually play with that kind of an arch. You know, like, the beginning is, like, very peaceful, then I kind of go nuts in the middle, and it kind of goes back to that peaceful mode. And it's something that I've noticed even when I play in ensembles. It just happens to be, like, my way of storytelling. And I think both examples that you played were at that point of the composition. So, but it's something that I'm not as conscious of when playing. I'm more conscious of it when I listen back to it, and I'm like, oh, maybe I got a bit too excited there. But it is who I am, so I accepted it. I used to be critical of it, but now I've accepted that it's the way I develop my material.
Right. Well, that's a very good explanation. I think it's clear when you listen to the piece how both densely complicated it is, and then your ability to, as you say, lift off into the arc of trying to say a lot and a lot musically. And it's an intense piece. And thank you for sharing that with us. With the time we had left, I wanted certainly to ask you about your involvement in the development of the Youth Jazz and Rock Festival in Serbia. So however you want to touch on that, explain it, or relate it is completely up to you. But I'd love to, I'm sure the audience would be very, very interested.
Thank you, and thank you for mentioning that. Yes, so I founded the Youth Jazz and Rock Festival back in 2018, and it's been happening for the past 6 years. And I've also been the managing director of it, because it's not a large team. But essentially, Youth Jazz and Rock Festival is an international music festival that takes some of the most interesting and fresh young artists from... It started with only artists from the Balkans, from the Balkan region, so like the countries around Serbia in that part of Europe, and presenting them. And the reason why I called it the Youth Jazz and Rock Festival is because back when I started the festival, although my opinion has changed a bit, it broadened. But my argument was that all contemporary genres branch out somehow from those two worlds, from jazz and rock. And of course, right. rock wouldn't exist without jazz. Any form of subgenres of rock wouldn't exist with the tradition and the lineage of jazz. So it's, essentially, it's a music festival. It's more than a jazz festival. It takes some of the most interesting new happening artists, and we put them in a 3-day program in Subotica, Serbia, which is my birth city, northernmost city in Serbia. And it's also an eclectic festival. We have things like a silent movie night. We have workshops. And over the time the festival developed, we've had international artists from around the world. And 2 years ago was the first time that I brought Berklee College of Music students to the festival. Yes. So there was artists from Dubai, from Spain, from France, etc. And ever since then, ever since 2021, we started bringing Berklee College of Music, Berklee College of Music students, and even Berklee College of Music professor Marko Đorđević, a Serbian drummer based in New York, who teaches at Berklee part time. Who is an absolutely astonishing artist. He plays with Matt Garrison and with a lot of people. And one of my thesis proposals for getting into Berklee Global Jazz, to the Berklee Global Jazz Institute, and one of my missions after the institute is actually to connect the institute with the festival. So we basically broaden the audience even more. And eventually my idea would be to bring the most interesting European artists to the United States through that connection. So that is kind of what we're working with now. But in terms of music, it's everything. It's it's jazz, it's contemporary classical, it's electronic music, electronic dance music, it's all subgenres of rock, it's hip hop, it's neo soul, it's everything. It's just the most interesting and young artists that we seek for every year. That's what's the story behind the festival.
Wow. Well, it reminds me, I have the opportunity to go to the Newport Jazz Festival in Newport, Rhode Island, and have been covering it as a writer and just as a music lover for about 8 years now. And I'm always introduced, and again, this is the great opportunity of festivals such as the one that you manage, is that it gives really unknown artists a chance to be on the stage and introduce themselves, to be heard, to play their version of jazz. And more times than not, when I go to the Newport Jazz Festival, it's 3 days now, there are discoveries. There are individuals who suddenly connect with an audience and nobody's actually ever heard of them. Really, they may not even have a recording contract. But I think that's what's wonderful about your festival, as you explained, and that's really what works, I think. And most of the other major jazz festivals. Aside from the legends that need to be there to draw the revenue, the recording stars who are up and coming, it's the individuals that you know you're going to get surprised about. So that's wonderful. Closing in on the end of our interview, I wanted just to touch very quickly on asking you just briefly that what is the jazz scene, if that's the right word to use, in Serbia? And then I'm going to ask you about your upcoming album.
The jazz scene in Serbia is developing, and I think it's growing rapidly, especially in the past 15 years. Although jazz was always a tradition in Serbia since the late 1930s, believe it or not. I believe that the Belgrade big band was developed in like 1937 or something like that.
Okay.
And this is something that people don't know, but Serbia has plenty of international jazz festivals. For instance, the Belgrade Jazz Festival is turning 40 this year, I believe. Which is quite extraordinary. So I grew up, it's not a part of like mainstream culture, popular culture. It's not what people talk about when they talk about Serbia. But I grew up seeing people like Joey Calderazzo, Kurt Elling, the Yellow Jackets, Wallace Rowney, Robert Glasper, all of these people in Serbia, believe it or not. So that was also a huge part of my development. And there was a festival in my city called Jazzic, that I'm really fond of. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore, but that's where I saw a lot of these artists. So it does exist, and there's some clubs going on and some young musicians that are passing the torch right now.
Great. Well, in closing, I just thought I'd have you say a few words about your upcoming release, its title, and when it's going to be released.
Yes, thank you. So my upcoming album is entitled Small Hours, and it will come out on November 17th. It's mainly a collection of live recordings of me playing solo piano, or although there's a few instances of pieces performed without an audience. And it really tries to illustrate what I previously mentioned in the interview, which is those moments in which I am absolutely alone and free to express myself without any background noise. And whatever comes out of that is, I think, the most honest version of me, because I don't have to wear a mask at night alone while sitting at the piano. But it's also an album of gratitude. It's an album that wouldn't exist like without the encouragement of people that I mentioned. Like, obviously family comes first, but without Laszlo's encouragement and without encouragement of some of the professors I mentioned, it wouldn't exist. So it's also my expression through their input, and it's my story shaped and influenced by the people that I admire. So it's not an entirely lonely album, despite its background story.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being with us as a musical guest. And I think your career has really been extraordinary already. And I hope listeners will seek out some of your recording performances on YouTube. And certainly you have an upcoming album that you've just mentioned, Small Hours, which will be released later this month in November. So thank you again, Pavla, for being a guest with us today. And I wish you the very best in your future career and in music and performance and whatever direction that will take you. So thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for hosting this.
Bye-bye.